Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio.
The IMF has issued a warning that Britain's economy will experience a decline this year as households are hit by the cost of living crisis. It makes Britain one of the worst performing advanced nations. Teachers in England and Wales look set to go ahead with their strike tomorrow after talks with the government broke down without agreement. Here's Kevin Courtney, the Joint General Secretary of the National Education Union.
I think they have had their head in the sands. They thought we wouldn't reach the thresholds. I think that they have to talk. It looks like we'll have to have the strike on the 1st of February, but the next strike in England is not until the 28th of February. There's time for them to talk.
Figures have shown that grocery price inflation has hit a record 16.7% to add a potential £788 to annual shopping bills. And the death toll from a suicide bombing at a mosque in northwestern Pakistan has risen to 88. Some 300 worshippers were praying in the mosque when a bomber set off his explosive vest yesterday morning. That's the latest from Radio News Hub. I'm Paul Blundell.
Say hello to Chase, the digital bank that makes every day rewarding.
Hey, wait a minute, what does that mean?
Well, you get 1% cash back on your everyday debit card spending.
So I can get cash back on my running shoes?
Yes.
Ooh, and on a static resistance exercise bike?
Yeah, sure, whatever that is.
What about my next spinning class?
Absolutely.
And a kale smoothie afterwards?
By all means.
And then maybe a cupcake?
It would be rude not to.
Ooh, lovely.
Get 1% cash back. Say hello to rewarding banking. Search Chase Bank.
18 plus UK residents. Cashback exceptions apply. Available for the first 12 months.
Colourful,
coming up next,
colourful,
Julius
colourful radio.
Do you use a traditional prepayment meter? The government is giving households in Great Britain £400 off their energy bills this winter. Energy suppliers are sending vouchers to those who are on traditional prepayment meters every month between October and March. Make sure your energy supplier has your up-to-date contact details. And please check your text messages, emails, spam or post for the vouchers if you haven't received them already. If you've lost or can't find the vouchers, your energy supplier can reissue them. Instructions from your energy supplier will explain where to redeem the vouchers. This will either be at a post office or PayPoint branch. And remember, you will never be asked to share your bank details to receive the discount. You will need to take valid ID with you, and you have 90 days to redeem the vouchers. For more information, search Energy Bills Support Scheme. That's Energy Bills Support Scheme.
Live on DAB Digital Radio, Colorful.com, and apps. This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
Africa in Focus is sponsored by Dermadew Lotion. Visit dermashark.co.uk.
Colorful Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, or even good evening, depending on the time zone that you are watching us or listening to us. Welcome to Africa in Focus, and I'm your host, Julius Mbaluto. I'm joined by a great, great lady. She's done so much, and you know, I'm just going to let her introduce herself so she can do it better than I can.
Thank you so much, Julius. And I'm in London. You know, a lot of people don't know. So my name is Sena Jimjimo. I am the director for Oromo Legacy Leadership and Advocacy Organization based in the United States. We work very closely with the U.S. government as well as UN and other international organizations. Our main focus is advocating for human rights of the Oromo people. Julius, I don't know if a lot of people know who the Oromo people are, but that's who I am.
Yeah, the Oromo people, great people, are from Ethiopia. Of course, Ethiopia is one of the East African countries, great East African, next to East African countries. But we consider it to be East African country, you know, just like Somalia. Even if the membership is not there.
You know, right? It's very odd. I mean, they are there.
it keeps on expanding. Just the other day, Democratic Republic of Congo joined. South Sudan joined. So Ethiopia will be there.
I think naturally
we are in, but
we'll get there.
But you get there. So Oromo people are from Ethiopia, and of course, their history is history of some time going through tough times, of course, because of Ethiopia government and all that, and of course, because I'm with Sena.
Yep, you got it.
Yep. Here with us.
That's what the good part.
I just want to give you the opportunity to tell us about the Oromo people, for people who haven't heard about them.
Seriously, right, Julian? You know, you're asking something that is a favorite thing for me to talk about it. And sometimes I feel like maybe I'm too infatuated myself with the Oromo. I've spoken about the Oromo people to a lot of government and non-government organizations. Yet, Oromos are still very unknown to the mainstream media, especially the international community. So the Oromo people are, you know, the single largest single ethnic group in the Horn of Africa, three or fourth in the whole continent. If you look at the data from 1960 up to 1990s, it puts the Oromo population somewhere about 50 to 60% of the Ethiopian population are Oromos, are from Oromia region. So that is out of 120 million. But the U.S. data put that about, U.S. CIA database put it about 38 or 37% of the population. That is still nearly over 40 million, however you do it. They are predominantly, obviously, in Ethiopia, and they have faced human rights abuses, continuous marginalization. And I think, like, when I think of the Oromos, you know, I think of people like Kurdish, honestly, because we're the majority are oppressed often by the minorities and excluded from political, economical, social, and a lot of time even from religion perspective. So these are who the people I'm talking about.
Amazing, amazing. And of course, Ethiopia is a big country, of course, with many different ethnic groups. Those who don't know about Ethiopia, it's also a very unique country in Africa because Ethiopia was not colonized. That's one thing. Ethiopia's got a different new year. Can you just share with us? It's unique in Africa, isn't
13
it?
13 months?
Yeah.
Yes, and I mean, from the months of the dates and the year are all different. Today in Ethiopia is 2015. So it's about 8 years behind, 7 days or 7 months and 6 days different in Ethiopia. They just celebrated Christmas on the 7th of January, wow. Not in 25th of December, but 2 weeks late. And they count 13 months of out of 12 months because what they do is they count about 30 days and the remaining 5, 6 days or 4 days is specially given a separate month. But, you know, Julius and me, as my background is in political science and I'm very much interested in the world politics, the Horn of Africa in particularly, and more than that about the Oromo. There's this saying in my language, you know, if you're gonna bury everybody's mom, if you could, you would bury your mom even deeper because your love is that much deeper. So me, my love and my interest is deeper when it comes to the Oromo, when it comes to women as well. I'm also kind of consider myself to be a feminist.
Yeah,
I know that's controversial a little bit. That it's a story of oppression. It's a story of marginalization. You think the majority, the language of the country would be the majority, right? I mean, if there is one national language, that it would be the language of the majority. But actually, in Ethiopia, to be quite honest, it was crime to even promote Afan Oromo about 30 plus years ago that it's punishable by 10 years in prison. Yes, Ethiopia is this country uncolonized, idealized by African countries and idealized by international as, like, you know, the only, you know, successfully defeated imperialism, the white colonization. But the empire, the country, I think, is finally in the last 4 years especially, is what's have been boiling for a century plus. It's going to unravel. So Ethiopia is in a precarious situation, I think.
Sina, you know, when we talk about Ethiopia today, a lot of people, the rest of the world, focus is in Tigray. And before that, we saw Ethiopia, of course, we saw the war that went on and break out, giving birth to the smallest country in the world, Eritrea. So when you look into Eritrea, then you talk about Tigray, what's happening now, people may think, oh, that's it. There's no one else affected. And you're saying Oromo people are one of the majority ethnic groups, yet they've been going through a history of oppression.
You know, Zolia, it's so funny. 4 years, no, November 12, the second Oromo protest started in the capital, engulfed the country for change that brought the current prime minister to power. Over 5,000 people paid heavy price, mostly young people. Change came to Ethiopia in 2018. For the first time in that country, we have a prime minister who claimed, say, I'm an Oromo, appointed to the highest office to appease the Oromos. That happened in April 2018. By December 2018, a state of emergency have been declared in Oromia, 7 months after the prime minister's office, in the southern and northern part of the country. Ever since have been, you know, on and off bombing, and including drone usage, the world could not see it. In June 30, 2020, very prominent musician was assassinated. I mean, for the Oromos who brought change in 2018, 2 years later, this guy was an icon, that he was assassinated. Then that kind of, it was a tipping point for the prime minister who say, I'm an Oromo, who say, I was part of the government for 27 years that oppressed, that killed you, forgive us, and let me transition to into democracy, to 360, that targeting the very forces, the voices that brought him to power, in dissenting against them and targeting them as the prime opposition in the youth movement. And by June 30th, by November 3rd, you have the conflict in Tigray. So everybody knows the conflict in Tigray. Tigray makes about 6% of Ethiopian population, and they are located in the far northern part of the country. Oromia is home to over 60%, by some account, you know, 40% other of the population, and also is where the capital, where the AU is based, is at the heart of Oromia, is the capital city of Oromia, as well as the federal government, that the AU could not utter a single thing for either condemning the violence against civilians withdrawn or call for inclusive dialogue, including, you know, where the government right now is fighting the rebel group. They are trying to put them down by force. So I think the international community is focused, not even sufficiently, because when you compare to Ukraine, the focus, the aid, the support that Ukraine is getting, if we can get just a fraction of that to Ethiopia, even to the Tigray region, you know, would have been a little bit of justice. But within Ethiopia itself, you have the majority who are oppressed for so long, but if you don't address that, what's going to unravel that country? What's going to be every single day? We're aging towards almost a tipping point with civil war between the largest ethnic group and possibly the second largest ethnic group that, you know, is going to be in. There's a religion aspect of it too. So imagine religion having. So this is the conflict that even our brothers in African continents are not aware about. I mean, who knows who Oromo? I mean, who knows that it was a crime to be Oromo in Ethiopia up until 1990? You know what I'm saying? That my dad was in prison in and out. My grandfather fought about against Haile Selassie. Haile Selassie is the messiah of Jamaica. And the man have committed heinous crime, as he would be next to Idel Fadr from Germany, but yet he is idolized. So I think Africa is in this precarious. I think we were talking earlier, like, are we striving towards better, or are we going back, regressing?
Indeed. Wow, this can only happen on Africa in Focus. And you know what? We are coming to you through Colorful Radio, all the way from the heart of London to wherever you are. And today, our focus is the Oromo people of Ethiopia.
This is Colourful Radio. Colourful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, Dermadew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, Dermadew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. Dermadew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Now, back to you, Shena. The one could be wondering, like, what are the key issues? Why the operation? Why? What makes even the government focus on the Oromo people in times of oppressing them? Is it something the Oromo people want, the government can't give?
Yeah, right. I mean, especially the government is saying they are from, they represent the Oromo. They came to power, they were brought to power, appointed to power. And I think this is important to know, because it's not like they came through election, it's not like they overcame through military. They were appointed specifically to appease Oromos, but yet Oromos, you know, are still dissenting, and thousands of them are in prison, thousands of them have died. Just this peace agreement 2 months ago, over 500 or more have been killed through drone and other things. But you don't hear that on the news. So I think your question is, what is it about Oromo? You know, why is it Oromo under, let's just say, the previous regime, EPDRF, where a coalition of four major ethnic groups came together, thousands of nations and nationalities, the Amharas, the Oromos, and the Somalis, came together and formed a government, but dominated by the Tigray Liberation Front. So, you know, you think, yeah, because it's a small minority group, too powerful, oppressing, but then you have same or similar situation right now. So I think to answer your question, something that I've been really, really thinking about it myself, and maybe you called me earlier, it's like as Africa, as a people, as a continent, if you look at it, as a young people depart, the brightest people still live in Africa, seeking better economic opportunity, democracy, and human rights, I mean, liberty to express their feeling. And yet, the country, the 55 countries, I don't know how much progress we have made, even as a continent, and I'm going to come back to the Oromo in particular. So what's happening to me in Oromia and what's happening to the continent is very reflective or similar. But I think the Oromos are, so the most fertile land, 59% of the Nile water that everybody's fighting comes from Oromia. 57% of country crop production comes from Oromia.
The biggest controversial dam.
Exactly. I mean, and then also the capital city where the powerhouse is an Oromo land. So if you are going to govern Ethiopia, you either have to be with Oromos or have to completely get them under
subdue
your control.
Subdue them.
There is no in-between. And so far in the last 150 years, this power has been through subduing them. And this is what the current government, unfortunately, seem to be continuing that path, subduing them rather than working in cooperation.
And when you look into the dynamics of politics across Ethiopia, we've seen, you could say the people who ended up in Eritrea, it was a bit of an issue of feeling they didn't have sense of belonging, therefore they had to secede. When you look into the Tigray as well, the appetite for secession is still there. And of course, that's where the government is trying to contain them. When you go to Oromo, is it, has it occurred, or maybe people thought, okay, this is the way to go as well?
You know, it's funny, Julius, because the Western government, in particular the U.S., that's how they defined the Oromo Liberation Army. Before that, the OLF, Oromo Liberation Front, as a secessionist group, Oromos are trying to secede or form their own country. And that is because it is convenient that, you know, if you and I disagree and what I have to tell, like, oh, no, Julius, he's not, he, what he wants is he want to have his own little country. He's not talking about democracy or human rights or inclusivity. He want to. And so you have the Western who it's much convenient to say, like, oh, yeah, Julius is the bad one because you want to have. But what Julius is asking is, like, democracy, because as a majority, you don't need to still vote. You will always win the vote of about 60% of the population. So the way the Oromo movement was always painted by not the Oromos, majority of them, by non-Oromos, and particularly those who have, you know, praising them as a secessionist, as a radical who's trying to disintegrate Ethiopia. So for the West, you can understand, like, oh, whoa, these are not the people we want to be with, you know what I'm saying? So keep them at the bay. But I think for the question is, it have been, especially me growing up as a young secessionist, was not far, you know, it was not something that we did not dream about. We did dream about it, but I think the conflict have is much more complicated than seceding there. And, you know, Oromia being at the heart of the country, hosting that many, population, it is impossible to have Ethiopia without Oromia. Ethiopia is Oromia.
At the heart of Ethiopia.
Exactly, the heart of Ethiopia.
And the heart never left any WhatsApp group.
The body would not survive.
It's like they are demean.
The body would not survive. You remove the heart.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah, wow. It's not easy. It's not easy. I saw a joke by Trevor Noah, the host of Daily Show, and he was talking about Britain telling them, how could you leave Europe? How can you practically leave? Your land is in Europe.
I know. What are you doing here?
Exactly.
Yes.
But on a very serious note, Shena, the thing is, current prime minister, when he came into power, he was like the best example for Africa. For heaven's sake, he won a Nobel Peace Prize. I watched photos of him and videos as he walked on the street, picking up all these dirty people, getting them cleaned up. And I was like, he's the coolest prime minister I've ever seen. What went wrong?
You know, Juliet, he was seen as a messiah. He was welcomed, celebrated by everybody, including the Oromos. And the reason why I want to emphasize in the word Oromo is because they brought the change that brought him to that office. Even though he was part of the government that oppressed them for 27 years, these people were ready to welcome him and forgive all the sin, all the atrocities, all the millions of people that got displaced and properties destroyed and millions who became a refugee, including me, myself, my family. We were ready. I mean, I met him, you know, a few times, so very briefly, that we were ready to move forward. But the question is, what went wrong, right? From this guy who's collecting trash and such an idol, and he was a young prime minister. I mean, there's no news media that have not praised him.
Yeah.
I mean, he was on the cover of New York, Times magazine. He was Times newspaper. He was covered and seen as the future of Africa leader, and I think the West was also just like everybody else. We accepted. But what people did not realize and what we didn't realize is also we didn't know this man. It was just like came from nowhere because he was not known figure at all. The president, the Oromia president, for him to become prime minister, the system requires that the ruling party chair have to be the prime minister. So the ruling party chair kind of descended his power to make him the president. That way he takes over the federal and he becomes a deputy and he takes, you know, controls Oromia. So he really have done something in Africa. You don't hear where a leader will step down to, you know, allow his brother to come forward. But in short time, the vision he had for Ethiopia was not the vision of the majority. And he was willing to go through force, as that happened in the past. But what happened is now we are in 21st century with the media, especially with the social media. He was not able to contain and have his way into the system, bringing, as some people accuse him, trying to bring back the old system, or where it's, you know, one ethnic group superior at the expense of multinational diversity. So it was about the how should Ethiopia be governed, through unitary, one language, one religion, versus multinational, where you have the Oromos, the Somalis, the Tigris, and things like that. And that's where I think he fell with the majority, and Oromos are... You have to understand, Julius, for the people who could not speak their language only 30 years ago, you can't take that away from them, that you think the country will be stable. And I think that's maybe his visions, you know, might not be 100% wrong, but the timing definitely seemed to be against him. And now you have the country... have went through at least, you know, genocide. If you look at the Tigray case, very well documented, where all the names and the definition of genocide, they are calling people in indiscriminate targeting, the rape, the starvation, crime. UN say it was crime against humanity, war crime. I mean, everything you can think of in the textbook of genocide is documented there, and we're not even mentioning or getting into the conflict in Oromia. And I think that's really what's going to determine where the region even will go, because they're just so huge.
Colorful radio. Colorful radio.
Yeah, of course, you've been doing a lot of work. Maybe we need to share about the work you do. And of course, we touch on the latest report pertaining this Oromo community, which is very latest as far as 2022, not right, far away from us.
That's correct, yeah. Actually, thank you for bringing that up, because so that is called Humans of Oromia. So what we do is we take one single case and we take about a whole week to kind of cover extensively what happened to that person, because it's easy to say 10 people were killed or 100 people. That kind of makes a person not human, more of statistic, you know what I'm saying? So what we try to do is take that statistic from that and humanize it by who is this person that got killed? What happened to his family? You know, what kind of legacy in his community does he have? Does his impact, his dying, you know, means a lot to the community? So kind of humanizing that. So we do that once a week over the year, and then annually we produce that. And I think we are... the very few organization that is covering Oromia. And that report did, you know, get attention of quite big media, which is very good. And so in that report, you see how, you know, we established how government violates their human rights that are, declared by the UN convention. And then also how the government, when they cannot get hold of the person, the suspect, they go after the family and sometimes go to completely burn the whole village if they cannot, you know, get hold of who they're looking for. And then we also established where the courts have released prisoners, but the government still yet to, you know, keep them there. So it tells you, like, okay, the government don't even follow its own court system, though even that court system is biased. And then you have a case of where the prisoners are about to die and the government still don't take them for treatment. All of this is protected. So the state of Ethiopia, the government being the primary protector of the citizen, have failed, and the international community, for failing to condemn that, have also failed to stop this violence and condemn it. And I think you also asked me about what the organization, right?
Yeah, the organization, yeah.
Yeah, so the organization I lead is founded in 2016. We've been working with the U.S. Congress since then. And 2017, we introduced a resolution that passed in 2018 and paved the way for change in Ethiopia, to be quite honest. And that's how our work is related to even to everybody. I'm here, obviously, meeting with the MPs from the U.K., but on the U.S. side especially. So we are like the advocacy voice of the Oromo community in the Western Hemisphere, including Europe, you know, here in U.K., definitely US, Canada, and Australia. We work with the U.S. as well as EU and different governments across the Western, and also we also work with NGOs like the UN, IOM, just different larger organizations, Red Cross and things like that, and bringing the situation in Romania, because there's really not information available in Romania if you don't actively look for who's doing it, and I think we are one of very few organizations doing that.
And when you look into the conflict, of course, these, you know, like the oppression by governments on the Oromo people, it's not be really, hasn't attracted media attention for a long time, and it's never gotten enough coverage. But then again, when you look into that, it's internal in terms of it's not going out, not a lot of people know. Like now, if you talk to anybody, talk about Ethiopia, they'll quickly remember Tigray, yeah, because that has really captured the attention of the Western countries and all that. So my question is, what can be done to bring to the attention of the international community, or even what can be done internally to end this oppression, because it's not been given attention maybe as, that's my feeling, as it should have.
Oh, absolutely. I think, Julius, I mean, tell me how many people, not even the people called Oromo, that they're going through this, that they've been bombarded by drone. They've been, that the government admit to arresting about 9,000 at the early 2020, you know, opposition say they arrested, you know, at least 100,000. The government admit to about 9,000, have say hundreds have died by international media. You don't hear about it. You know what I'm saying? It is, so to say that it is, you know, attention is lacking is absolutely, I think you're on point on that one. And I think if the West is, because the West is, you know, dictated by, I think, two things. One, trade. You know what I'm saying? They want to have a trading, because at the end of the day, trade control business, you know, comes first. Human rights is always second. Second is the presence of China. You know what I'm saying? That they have China in the continent, and so their concern is like, you know, China's controlling or dictating too much of Africa, so they feel like they're behind, they have to act on it. So they have that to urge. So how do you balance China trade on one side and human rights and democracy? Because, you know, especially in the US and UK, that you have a moral that you say like, oh, we're expanding democracy, we're expanding, we care about human rights. But really, I mean, you are looking the other way. In the long term, I think it will bite them, because if this is not addressed by, you know, if you support a government such as Ethiopia right now, they don't change the course and allow truly independent investigation and some kind of transitional justice for the country move forward, we're going to find ourselves at the same place few years or few decades down the road. So it's in the best interest of those pro-democracy voices to partner with a country that is accountable to the people. If not, this dictator that now you wanted to have on your side, not on the China side, it's going to bite you. And the West is being bullied through imperialism, you know, racism, as well as also China. If you don't support me, I'll go to China. It's like, no, come to us, come, you know, we support you. So it's just like they are kind of conflicted. But then if they really don't stand on the side of the people, then eventually the country will not be ready for any kind of business trade or that they're aspiring, because the peace have to be there. So, and to do that, you do have to really look at larger context. Not really, okay, the Tigray war that happened November 3rd, but what led to that? How do we get to there? And I think that's not what we are talking about right now. We're talking about, like, listen, this is the issue. This is the issue that we need to address it. And let's just, you know, just like, it's just like the, you know, narrow, it's much smaller, narrow, and it makes it easy for them to just say, like, okay, this, I deal about it. Other than that, it's too big for them to deal. And especially, it's Africa, so, like, who really cares? Justice? I don't know. Justice seems to always evade Africa. I mean, it's not a lot of African countries where justice has prevailed, but I do think when you have the majority like the Oromos, that I think that you will not have a peaceful or stable Ethiopia if you really don't talk about the larger context. And right now what's missing is the larger conversation.
Wow, this is Africa in Focus. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. In today's studio, I'm joined by Shena Kipchumo.
Kipchumo.
Yeah. Kipchumo.
Yeah. Go ahead and give me
I was careful.
No, I guess I saw that.
Thank you. Yeah. You're going for a quick break. We'll be back. Don't go away.
This is Colorful Radio. Colorful Radio.
During life, your skin is subject to many conditions, leaving your skin rougher and tighter. We want to help. At DermaShack, our unique formula provides day-to-day moisture for all skin types. Our signature cream, DermaDew, is a cream that can be used for both specific areas of dry skin and as a daily moisturizer. So why don't you try our cream, DermaDew, an intense rehydration cream that leaves your skin like silk. Please go to our website, dermashack.co.uk, to see our skincare range and begin your journey into total moisturization. DermaDew, total body cream, complete moisturization.
Welcome back. Welcome back from the break. Yeah. We carry on, Africa in Focus, coming to you from Colorful Radio, all the way from the heart of London. So we were talking about Ethiopia, Oromo people, challenges over the years, oppression internally by different governments in different times. So in the studio, I'm with Shena. Now, let's pick up from where we left.
Yes. So I think, thank you. And again, Julius, because I feel like your listener will be surprised with a lot of things that I'm saying to them. Yesterday, you know, we were at the House of Parliament with the UK government, parliamentarians. A lot of the information we gave them, in particular about Oromia, is very new to them. So I suspect a lot of your viewers have always been the case, like, what? So you have such a, you know, majority who are oppressed and silenced for century plus and could not even speak their language. And I don't know. I cannot say that I'm expert in history. How many countries that when a language of the majority is criminalized, banned? You know what I'm saying? Ethiopia, how do you define racism or
we call them black on black crimes.
Sounds like my country of America, right? Boy, black on black crime is very popular there.
Yeah.
But I think black on black crimes and the West and the international community is like, I see nothing, I hear nothing, let's just move forward with the business. And it's been going on in the backyard, in front of AU. So what's wrong? How can Africa move forward when you have the country leader, such as the AU, choose actively to not see? Not they didn't see, because within a couple of kilometers, you know, Oromia is violence, where the government have cracked down, shut down the internet, have, you know, November, since the peace deal agreement signed between Tigray and the federal government, there have been security for National Defense Force have beheaded people on camera.
Wow.
I'm talking about they have dressed and they're like, you know, and not one, and roasted people alive. You can see a person trying to get out, they put them back. This is not some extremism. This is the defense force committing such a thing, and AU could not even condemn it. AU could not even demanded, you know, government take some action. So to me, as an African myself, Julius, then what is the role of AU? Is AU symbolically there and to continue the more power harnessing to keep the back of, you know, dictators or strongmen to continue oppressing its people? I mean, it's sad.
I thought, though, before the signing of the peace agreement, negotiations were done and probably people came on to the table to talk about it. And I'm thinking also all stakeholders. Wasn't that the case?
Well, you know, a negotiation happened in a very, very, very short time. The special envoy from the U.S., obviously led by the AU, but really you know, how much powerful, how much AU is really leading this, because AU is accused of things that we almost are accusing them. They've been accused by the same thing with the Tigray. And then it's truly, I mean, they have remained indifferent or silent when many atrocity happened right before their eyes. But through the U.S. pressure and, you know, other international community, the peace agreement was reached in South Africa. That peace agreement put some kind of impossible time frame, you know, when they're going to be disarmed, when the government will allow, you know, unfettered access to humanitarian help and restore services and so much thing. Well, even it took about 2 months, even for the first, that agreement that's supposed to be within 7 days, took roughly about 6 to 7 weeks to implement that. But that did agreement have is between the TPLF, the ruling party in the Tigray region, and the federal government, you know what I'm saying? So that is a specifically, exclusively narrowed conflict in Ethiopia with what's happening in Tigray. But the conflict is, long before Tigray, there was a conflict in Oromia. And then now there's a conflict in Amhara because of the war with the Tigray. Amharas are directly involved, where they are accused of committing, you know, the genocide, war crime. I mean, the UN have specifically singled out the Amhara force, the Amhara militia, who are also accused not just in a Tigray crime, but in Oromia, Benishangul Gumuz, and other accused. So you have actively there, and the next door you have Afar. So you have all this. Nobody's talking about that. We're only talking about the peace agreement between TPLF, or, you know, right now maybe Tigray regional government, and the federal government. So that peace agreement is too narrow. That's why the conflict in the Oromia side have even got worse, because the government now can even focus more in the southern part of the conflict in Oromia and try to put down the rebel through force. And there have been atrocity we haven't seen in the last, you know, 3 years, and what we saw in the last 2 months, all of this beheading, burning people alive, really came out just in the last, since the peace agreement side. So the peace agreement is hopeful and good news for the Tigray and the northern, but it is definitely, so far, has been bad news for the southern and for the Oromos in particular.
Would you think then it's about time then the federal government decided to call the Oromo people on the table and talk about these issues? For future, for the sake of peace.
Right, all right. For the sake of peace, and the country cannot afford. The country simply cannot continue to work itself into peace. They have to be at the end of the day in peace. And I do think so. Actually, we, our organization, are very trying to push both parties, the government and as well as the OLA, who are fighting against the government, to sit down for a negotiated peace settlement, because they do have a demand, and the government, you know, can have their own demand. You know, if you can settle the conflict, such as the Tigray and the government, and the UK government, UK Parliament, as, you know, global players, have the role and the responsibility that peace cannot be selective, can come to only one region where you let alone, you know, the fire to burn. It's like somebody say, when your house is caught on fire on one side, you don't just put out this side and just say let it burn, because eventually it will cut up. Peace, if it does not come to all Ethiopia, will eventually, will cut, the rest of Ethiopia will, like, might be tomorrow, might be next year, might be 5 years from now. But the country have to come to peace agreement. And right now, cessation of hostility in Oromia need to be enforced, and government need to be pressured to stop bombing using drone and allow access to humanitarian aid. I mean, in addition to conflicts, Julius, according to USAID, 5 million people in Oromia, in just Oromia, are in a desperate need of food. 2020 OCHA report, 2021 OCHA report that came out in February, say 40% of children malnourished were in Oromia. Out of the country. They were in Amhara, they were in Tigray, they were in Oromia. Keep in mind, Oromia is the producer of the girls of the country, yet 40% of the children was malnourished 2 years ago, February 2021. And now, last year, last month's report that came out, 5 million people are in a catastrophe of food help, and government is not delivering, and is not even asking for the international community to help those areas. So it's starving its people. Media, there's no media access in Oromia. There's nobody's talking about what's happening in Oromia. The government is bombing us as wish. So we are definitely thinking it is for the sake of peace, for the sake of the country and to move forward. The government should stop playing, fist lifting, because something that sounds so good. It's like, I'm ready for, negotiation. They have been saying that, but actually mean what they're saying, that, try to negotiate settlements with the OLA, and OLA also should definitely try to be ready to settle down and talk in the US, and the UK in particular should definitely play a leading role to make sure this comes to the country.
There are different types of interventions when it comes to the Western countries. Some places they intervened, but they didn't have full understanding, and therefore their efforts were counterproductive. Look at the case of Iraq, weapons of mass destruction that were not there. Look at Afghanistan, and after all the years of efforts, in the end, Afghanistan is still back in the hands of the Taliban. So some interventions happened, but they didn't bring positive results. Do you understand, from your point, when you are from Oromo, do you understand when you look into the international community who are trying to intervene in one way or the other, do you think they have enough understanding, and do they properly contextualize their help?
Actually, those points you raised, they're very significant. In the last 21st century, for 20 years, trillions of dollars were spent in Afghanistan. And look at Iraq before Saddam Hussein, and after, look at Libya, So you can take those countries and say, so why did the West got it wrong? Do they have the capacity to understand? Why do they keep getting wrong? In the case of Africa, because those are maybe Middle Eastern or predominantly Muslim countries, when it comes to Africa, what is the racist understanding? I think, like I said earlier, Julia, it's driven by two things. One, the interest to drive China out of the continent. That comes before that. Secondly, at the end of the day, business. They want to do business. That the American people, the British people, they want to do business there. Africa is the gifted continent, and then you have a cheap resource, a human capacity that you can do, rather than here in the UK or in the US. So there is one that thing on that one side. On the other side, in the case of Ethiopia, Ethiopia was very successful in using the race car to silence the West. Because as soon as the West and the UK and the America pressured them, look at these white people. Look at they're trying to impose their imperialism. But what they ask is about respect for human rights. But no, they didn't ask us. They want to tell us what to do. No, you're killing your people. International community have a responsibility when the state failed to protect citizens to enforce. If a government decide, in the case of Germany, the German government did, so the international community rose up and stopped Germany. Why can the international community in the West, stand up in one voice saying that this happened in Ethiopia, this needs to stop? No. You can see that, peace agreement was signed in the UK government and the EU was in Ethiopia, talking about trade. You wouldn't talk of trade with Bashar from Syria. After accused of committing crime against humanity, war crime, and possibly genocide, yet when it comes to Africa, there seem to be no limit. But why is the West doing that? I think, those two points driving. Two is it's African, it's dispensable, it's dispensable. And I don't really blame them. I blame ourselves as in the continent. The continents, the African countries, if you see, when the UN Human Rights Council voted for investigation, all of Africa countries who were on the UNHCR commission, they opposed it, they were present. So you say you don't look at my back, I'm not going to look at your back, because if I dig up some human rights on this side, we all are dirty. So they kind of, the continents continue to fail the people, and the West is taking a cue, hey, if the continent responsible for this don't care, why should we spend our time and resource trying to care, like just put the bandage in, you know, in the wound rather than really looking into the source of the conflict or the issue.
When you talk about Ethiopia, we talked about the Tigray, we talked about the Oromo. Are there other bigger groups, and are they okay? Are they peaceful, and are they enjoying the liveliness?
I don't think so. Julia, nowadays, the inflation, I mean, it is crazy from what I heard. In the country, 24 million people are in desperate need of food help across the country. And out of 24, according to USA report that came out in December, 5 million of them are in Oromia. Obviously, you know, there was a COVID, there was a locust outbreak, and there was the war in Ukraine, and then the conflict within Ethiopia itself, and then the larger conflict, first the Tigray conflict, the larger conflict. So there is nobody, I don't think, is enjoying. A couple of years ago, there were at least, you know, one group, I think they were enjoying, because I remember in 2020 when we were protesting, particularly the Amhara community was counter-protesting us. We were protesting against the prime minister for, you know, human rights. But I think today they have fallen out with the prime minister. So the Amharas are not happy. The Oromos are certainly not happy. They haven't been happy. And Tigrayans, I think everybody know what's happening in Tigray. But I think, in a way, these are the three, you know, peacemakers or troublemakers in the country. These are the three ethnic groups who will dictate if that country is stable or explode, fragmented, or peace come to that country. These are the three. So all those three ethnic groups are very, very unhappy. So that's what makes this time an ideal time, because everybody is hungry for peace, because everybody have seen enough of their people mutilated, killed. The degree might be different, but I think the atrocity is so across the board. So that's what makes it so good for right now, for truly lasting peace. But with the international community lack of focus and so fast moving in trying to normalize, we do concern that, because once this government gets back to the resource it needs, then it would be very difficult for the international community to push for justice and accountability. Right now, there's no investigation going on in major part of the country. In Tigray, possibly, but in Oromia, certainly not.
What do you think would be the best way forward to achieve a lasting peace?
Right. I think as an Oromo activist, you know, I've been in the Oromo political scene since my teen years. My dad, as I told you, was in and out of prison. Being arrested, being killed, is something that we know too well for my people, for the Oromo people. I don't know if I've met anyone that have not lost a family member to previous government, EPDRF, you know. We became refugee because of that system. So we were feeling that heat. The Tigrayans were not feeling that heat. The Amharas were not feeling that heat. So it was really difficult for people to sympathize and to see. But now, as I was saying earlier, they felt the heat. The Amharas felt the heat. And those who were not part of these three saw what injustice looked like. I mean, they have the Somali community who have felt the heat before this government. So they know what human rights abuse look like, what beheading, I mean, you know, roasting people alive. I mean, I think you can imagine the kind of trauma that leaves you. So I think people have seen enough. This time is the best time for the country to chart a new political agreement, to chart how Ethiopia will move forward. Now, what the government is trying to do is like, okay, what happened is bad. Let's just move forward. Like, don't open it. Don't open the portal, because we don't. But I don't think that's going to leave a lasting peace, because it's important that we open the bags. Because just because somebody died, I don't think Olympiad is asking for revenge. But we need a justice. We need some kind of accountability. You don't want the murderers, the generals who have committed this, to continue enjoying the luxury they enjoy. Because that would be injustice for the people, you know. So the government is trying to take that approach. So the best way would be, my recommendation for the government is that, I think by grace of God, they had a because after they committed all this crime, that the international community, particularly the West, is still willing to welcome them is mind-boggling to me. Because if that was anybody else, imagine Putin, like the America being next to Putin, and they won't do that. But in the case of Africa, you know, they seem to be doing it. And I think as Ethiopians, we are at the point that, you know, yes, we don't want to go back, but still you have to be justice. So to do that, we're urging the government, Ethiopian government, to immediately, you know, a cessation of the hostility in the case of Oromia, because that's right now, that's the main battleground, stop the, you know, and sit down for national dialogue, for negotiated settlement with the rebel group, Oromia and others too, who are actively arming and fighting this government. The government have closed the peaceful, non-violence way of, you know, voicing their concern or dissent. So right now is a good time to open that and for the government to use this opportunity in the will of the international community that has given them a second or maybe the tenth chance to move it forward, now with the illusion that, you know, we're not going to look back, but rather but the truth open up and inclusive dialogue. You have to have all, especially the major ethnic group, have to have together and then have a chart a new way. I think that is the best time best and the only way. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Listeners, that's all we have for the time we have. It's been fantastic speaking to Shena. And of course, it's not the last time. I'll bring her again. We keep talking about these issues. Here we are talking about Africa. I'm your host, Julius Baluto. For now, do have a wonderful time.
Colorful Radio.
Don't last forever.